Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McHusick, and it's time for this week's Know Your Foe show. We're looking ahead to that Week 18 Sunday night matchup against the Steelers. Joining me to do that is Sigmund Bloom of Football Guys. You probably have heard of him. If you haven't, you've been in a cave. A good podcast. He's got what else? What else do you have going on, Sigmund?
Yeah, you know, we're here year round with people that think too much about football. Not even fantasy football season can stop us from obsessing about everything: free agency, the coaching carousel, the draft, and just what we're here to talk about today. Just the ever evolving. You know, I say, Ken, that the great American novel now is the NFL. You know, it's Dickensian, and the scope encompasses everything. And in this case, you know, we've got two teams, old guard coaches on a showcase game, but maybe showcasing that you feel like we're coming closer to the end of something than the beginning of something.
Yeah, well, that certainly feels that way. And if you look on message boards of either team, there's a very vocal, and I'm not sure if it's a minority anymore, but a very vocal group of fans who want Harbaugh fired. A very vocal group of fans that want Tomlin fired. There seems to almost be a group of people who would feel better if both coaches got fired. Or if, another group who says the whole division, all four coaches in the division should be fired. I think the Browns have already committed to Stefanski for another year. Actually, no, it's Zach Taylor. Zach Taylor, the report came out that he was safe.
Yeah. And I think that familiarity breeds contempt. And I can't speak so much to the Harbaugh and Raven side. And I don't necessarily feel like Harbaugh's fingerprints are on. There's not a Ravens way in the same way that there's a Steelers way, or there's just a certain personality. And again, maybe if I was looking at this from the Baltimore perspective, I would have that same sense of a Groundhog Day, at least in the latter day era. But in the case of Mike Tomlin, I think that we can start to put these things together, Ken, where one of the ones that stands out to me is the draft. You know, one year they take Jarvis Jones in the first round, who's got production and, you know, a glass eater, but doesn't have the measurables. He's a bust. Then the next year they take Bud Dupree, who's got all the measurables, maybe not the production. And the iterations the offense has gone through, the lack of accountability on the defensive side, and there's just a sort of sameness to the way that these seasons unfold. And they unfold with a sense of defeatism or fatalism about this Steelers team just not being able to compete in the AFC right now, which is not where I think the Ravens' psyche as a fan base is. You know, they're disappointed that they feel like this team should have, and that the window is closing. But either way, you know, this is now the second most storied iterative rivalry. It was Lambeau and Hallis, you know, that's it. And maybe that's a sign that these fan bases and these franchises are ready for something different, because both of these teams are going to really feel like underachievers unless they surprise us over the next few weeks.
Yeah, I think that's very, very true of the Ravens, certainly. And I guess in each case, it seems like the coach would jump to the top of the list if they were fired. And, you know, the New York Giants, would they love to have a Harbaugh or a Tomlin? You know, any other number of teams that are out there that have had a cycle of bad coaching hires, I think would be fun. And it does lead to some of the other strange discussion. This is more about Tomlin, about Harbaugh. I haven't really seen this on Baltimore boards about Harbaugh, but the thought is that Tomlin is worth a draft pick in return if he's traded. Yeah. It's just a matter of a new location and whatnot. I don't see it happening, by the way, but the same has not really been said about Harbaugh. Ravens fans are very hard line about him. They say he's made so many mistakes this year and whatnot. I don't completely agree with it, but more than that, I want this to go away while there's this great football being played in front of us.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we can recast this game out of the negative into the positive, where we're going to see which one of these teams, the players that are the spirit of the team, or at least the players that the team looks to for those cues, and how they perform, and who can endure, and who can get a chance to play Houston Texans likely in a game that they'll be an underdog, likely a home underdog. Mm-hmm. However, you know, maybe for each of these teams, that us against the world mentality, Aaron Rodgers has already been trying to cultivate that for weeks now for the Steelers. You know, maybe that's what they need to find themselves, because right now it just feels like, you know, it's strange to have the AFC North champion backing into the playoffs, but that's where we are.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on. The Steelers, obviously, coming off that loss to the Browns. We've talked about times where the Steelers have been a big favorite, and they weren't really against Cleveland. They're 3.5, 4-point favorites, I think, as the game went off. But we've talked about in the past all the three or so games that Tomlin's lost over the years when he's an 11-point favorite have taken years off your life. Is that another case, this one?
Well, I think this was, you know, actually this one wasn't too stressful because you could tell from the first iteration, you know, in these games that are like, you know, there's like a fractal element. You can watch the first few drives and get a feel for how the team's playing and whether they're ready to rise to the occasion. And it didn't feel that way last week. And I do think the Steelers, like, they're 0-4 and a tie in the last five games against teams that are at least 9 games under 500, which is just an amazing, amazing statistic, like threading the needle, you know? But I think where the Steelers are right now is an offense that, again, that suspension, DK Metcalf going to the stands to start an altercation with a fan who, you know, did have a history with him, but it didn't matter. And ironically, it was Steelers fans pointing at Lamar Jackson and his interaction with the fan and saying, you know, what about that, right? But without DK Metcalf and then Darnell Washington, who goes down with a broken forearm last week, and he's really important to the Steelers offense, because he can block. I mean, because he's a player that the more he's been on the field, the better the offense has looked, certainly in Arthur Smith's offense. So now you have kind of a Monty Python, Black Knight kind of, you know, the arms are chopped
yes.
off. And then the Steelers, I think the other thing from last week that really feels so discouraging is we saw the dark side of Aaron Rodgers just doing his thing as through the game on the line. Three straight plays, he threw the ball to Marquez Valdes-Scantling with Denzel Ward on him, and none of the plays even looked like they had a, you know, can the ball, like, sometimes as soon as the ball's out of the quarterback's hands, like, this isn't going to work. Mm-hmm. And to have that happen three times in a row, where Valdes-Scantling didn't even make a good bid on the ball on any of these plays, I think just shows the dead end that the Steelers offense is at. And if that doesn't change, I don't think it even matters what the Ravens do.
All right. Well, let's catch us up on the injury statuses across the team. I know there's a number of things. And also, like, the Steelers have most of their players coming back this week that haven't been
right
lost for the year.
Yeah. And TJ Watt, I think, is the biggest name here. And Derek Harmon's getting healthier. That has been a big improvement for the run defense. But on the offensive side, I think that you're not going to see much in the way of the ability to move the ball through the air. And I think you're probably relying on TJ Watt. You're relying on the defense to make plays. And they have harassed Lamar Jackson at times, and mm-hmm. they have given him a hard time. The matchup earlier this season, I think, was actually one of his better games against the Steelers in his career. And I think that the Steelers are going to have to depend on splash plays. And TJ Watt coming back from a dry needling procedure that went awry and a collapsed lung. So there's a lot of optimism about him coming back. And, you know, he's basically the Hail Mary for this team to try to find a way to win this game.
Right. Well, it's certainly in the past with Highsmith and him, they've and Herbig. I mean, mm-hmm. I watched Sawyer play this last
year. Yeah,
and I'm already seeing the Steelers just have an endless ability to generate new high quality pass rushers. But anyway, Brandon Echols, James Pierre, in terms of the secondary, are they going to play?
Yeah, you know, looking at the secondary, Echols has been a big addition, and I think that we're probably going to see him. He was limited on Thursday, so with the season on the line, he's likely to play. But Pierre did not practice yesterday, and he's listed with an illness. But he's also been a rare playmaker as the team has, since they moved Jalen Ramsey to more of a safety position. These cornerbacks, along with Joey Porter, hasn't given up a touchdown, and I don't even remember how many snaps, over 1,000 snaps or something like that.
Wow.
So, you know, again, the Steelers defense is going to have to be almost perfect in this game. And we have seen them do that in big games. And we have seen this matchup often devolve in a way down to a defensive struggle. And that's what the Steelers, they want to turn it into a street fight.
Right. Yeah, that's certainly, the Ravens do not want to shorten game, even though they want to run the football and will probably shorten the game themselves. But you're absolutely right. Talk about the state of the offensive line. And one of the incredible, like, deals for the Steelers was to have Dylan Cook come in at left tackle and replace Broderick Jones. I mean, what the hell?
Yeah. Well, then this is a line that now we're seeing the interior line gel Frazier and McCormick, and then Dylan Cook comes in and he looks like the left tackle of the future. And honestly, Jones wasn't really working out. He was not looking like a hit as a draft pick, a player they moved up to take. So this is something, I mean, if there's a silver lining for Steelers fans, it is the offensive line. Spencer Anderson, I mean, they have depth finally, and they do have an ethos. We saw it in the game against the Lions, where they just were stampeding the Lions in these long runs that Jalen Warren was hitting the hole. And it looked like, and we saw this earlier going into the bye week against Minnesota, also a game where they won in the trenches. But watching the Steelers offensive line from week to week and watching the way the Steelers decide to engage the opponent week to week, there's just that lack of consistency and a sense of identity. And that's a real problem when your two of your best players are out.
All right. So Siamalo, is he going to be back and playing in this game, or?
Yeah, he's back to a full practice this week. So again, that interior offensive line is firmed up. And the question is, unlike last week against Cleveland, whether they can use that to execute in the Arthur Smith offense, with the Ravens really being able to compress the field on defense, because the Steelers don't have any kind of legitimate vertical threat.
Yeah, I think one thing we haven't seen from the Steelers, from the Ravens recently, is any use of three down linemen. But I am expecting a fair amount of base defense in this game. The Steelers' strength is along the offensive line. They use that sixth offensive lineman. I think it's very fortunate for the Ravens they don't have their seventh offensive lineman in Washington active for this game. But the Ravens have four nose tackles and Brent Urban. That's who they have as their defensive line. It's a very unusual thing. But during this time, and you may have seen this, Travis Jones has really stepped up as just an absolute monster as a three tech. And now that leaves a question as to how the Ravens rebuild the line. Will they go after a nose tackle or a penetrating three tech like Matabike was, if Matabike is indeed done for his career at this point?
Yeah, and the Steelers are going to have to rely on their running backs as receivers also. So, that's the offense should revolve through the backfield. It should have last week, but for whatever reason, they decided not to.
Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything: data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Deep with them.
Did they do any pony last week, having Gainwell as a flanker or whatever on the field with it? Okay.
Very little, not enough. And, you know, it seemed like the Browns had a lot of those Gainwell plays sniffed out. So, you know, again, this is a Steelers team that at times has been too predictable on offense. And if unpredictable is Aaron Rodgers and what he draws up in the sand, you know, that's not a path to victory either.
All right. Let's talk about the receiving core and who's left. Calvin Austin.
Yeah.
Where does he fit? And take us through who's there.
Yeah, well, almost nobody. I mean, Scotty Miller is a player that Calvin Austin is getting in a limited practice, but again, Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Last week, Mike Tomlin even said that Roman Wilson, the third round draft pick from 2024, that he had earned more opportunity. They were excited for him to get more opportunity. I think he had 9 snaps, you know, which is really frustrating because Jets fans are nodding along somewhere. This idea that this is Aaron Rodgers' offense. And you know, there were times, certainly we've seen in the first matchup, the vertical passing to DK Metcalf and some sign of life from the quarterback play for the Steelers. But at this point, if they're going to move the ball through the air, it has to be Pat Freiermuth. On the last drive, the last gasp drive, it was finally 2 plays to Freiermuth. And Freiermuth had a 2-touchdown, 100-yard game against the Bengals. And Jonnu Smith, this was a pre-season trade, reuniting with Arthur Smith. So this is a time for him doing something. Connor Hayward, again, the tight ends and the running backs are going to have to be the emphasis of the offense, which just doesn't sound like anything to be afraid of.
When you mentioned Valdes-Scantling, the Ravens are no stranger to having like no receiving core in a game against the Steelers. Let's put it that way.
Right.
The 2008 AFC Championship game, it's a few years ago, but I'm sure you remember it. Mm-hmm. They had one of their big plays in that game was a pass interference drawn in the end zone by Marcus Smith. Now, why Marcus Smith, who had 0 career catches, would ever be on the field is something, but he was on the field a whole bunch in that game and made the play of his career to set up the second, I think it was the second touchdown that got him within 16-14 before the lights went out on that next drive. All right. We talked a little bit about the receiving core then. Let's flip over to the defense. Let's talk about what this defense does well. I do want to talk about the stoutness against the run because I think that's going to be the Ravens' first point of probing here in this game is can they get it going and will they be able to use misdirection from Lamar?
Yeah, with the addition of Derek Harmon and Yahya Black has been a big presence. And, of course, Cameron Hayward, who is, along with T.J. Watt, like one of the signature players of this era for the team. And then Keanu Benton, who, you know, the Steelers have had some different players, Javon Hargrave, come through as disruptive players, and they've had to replace them. And Benton looks like he's the next man up. So they're tough to move. They can create disruption. And then, like you said, from the edge now, at this point, this team is 4 deep. Jack Sawyer had a nice interception last week on a play when Shedeur Sanders was hit while he's thrown. And like you said, there's no let up in the energy from those players and the way that they can make plays that turn the game because of how the run defense has. And we're kind of back to that old Steelers where you might not even want to try to run on them when the front is really clicking. That being said, I think that, you know, we can see on the Ravens side, there's a true commitment to the run in a way that, you know, might be one of those canary in the coal mine things about what the internal state of the franchise and its the team and its assessment of itself.
I think that's probably fair. I mean, the Ravens will, I always say they need to take what the opponent gives them. If the Steelers are crowding the line of scrimmage, they need to have plays that beat crowding at the line of scrimmage. The Steelers certainly beaten the Ravens that way in the past. This year earlier, it seemed like they were not really crowding. They were comfortable with a 4-man pass rush. They didn't really try and bring a lot of extra heat. When that's the case, you need to consider, how does the run look and can we maximize our misdirection? But the one thing that is really frustrating is when the Ravens get crowded at the line of scrimmage and they still try their misdirection things because they just don't work with eight guys stretched out. You need to then try to pierce the defense with point of attack football. And they have the players to do it. They have the scheme to do it, but they don't always go with that. So that could be frustrating. At the second level, Patrick Queen is an old friend of ours. Mm-hmm. How's his year been? I saw he won some award for the team this last week, and he's coming up on the third year of his contract. Are you expecting him to be retained?
Well, he might be retained because what's the alternative? But I think there have been plenty of times that Ravens fans have been watching him as a Steeler, even against the Ravens, and said that's why we're comfortable. Then, you know, even Malik Harrison is on the Steelers roster now. Definitely been a position that's vulnerable. Even Peyton Wilson with his athleticism, it's a position we've seen exploited in the middle of the field to pass against the Steelers and just kind of passive in pass coverage. And you know, that's going to be an interesting matchup. It was Joey Porter who broke up the pass to Isaiah Likely that could have determined the outcome of the first matchup. But I definitely think that Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely and the Steelers just not, if this, you know, it's very a familiar picture where if the Steelers pass rush gets home or against the Ravens, if they force Lamar Jackson to make a decision early in the play, like just force his hand in some way as a passer, then they can do well. But if the play gets to that third beat or so, somebody's getting open, and if Jackson can find him, especially in the middle of the field, the big play is going to be there.
Right. All right. And maybe you can, it hasn't been that long, but how did the Steelers most commonly line up in obvious passing situations? Are they a dime team now where they pull one of their two linebackers? Are they a committed nickel still where they're running a 4-2-5 or a nickel defense typically?
Yeah, I think that to keep speed on the field, they have been playing more with two linebackers and Jalen Ramsey. But I do think that it'll be interesting to see if they make adjustments just based on Derrick Henry getting 36 carries last week. And that being something that I think there was a conscious decision, Todd Monken said as much about that mode of attack. And I don't see any reason, even though, it seems predictable. I mean, sometimes that is a way in this game. You know, this matchup is often about these two teams trying to physically impose their will on each other. And that's what Henry did last week.
Mm-hmm. And the last playoff game in Baltimore as well last year. So, I think there are reasons why the Ravens will try it as you're talking about here. Now, I don't ask for score predictions ever on this, but I do like to get you to give us one player on each side of the ball that you think matches up well against the Ravens.
Yeah. I do think that looking back at that first game, I think it was Jaylen Warren leaking out of the backfield on a blitz. I think the Steelers, if they're rational, will try to get either one of the running backs out in space against a linebacker and use Aaron Rodgers' experience and quick processor and anticipation to create something because I think that's, and you know, it'll be interesting to see if the Ravens don't take that bait and don't try to be aggressive because they know they'll be able to sit back because they can't threaten downfield. And then on the other side of the ball, I mean, I don't know if this is even a negative because again, Joey Porter's been playing really well, but who does he, in a chess match, who's he canceling out? You know, it's not going to be Zay Flowers and Rashad Bateman or DeAndre Hopkins. These aren't essential players. So in some ways, that's a plus for the Ravens because a player that can influence the outcome of the game for the Steelers, and he did in the first matchup, again, on that last play, but not in a game plan or flow of the game or keeping the Ravens from doing what they want to do kind of way.
Okay. All right. Outstanding stuff, Sigmund. Always a pleasure. Always a great discussion when we have you on. Tell folks where they can contact you if they have a question online and also where to find your material.
Yeah. Football guys, you know, we've got our show, The Audible, and I do a ton of stuff during the season on, you know, managing your fantasy football teams week to week. But then in the off season, we just do a lot more general football. That's what we love anyway. So it's great. You know, it continues to be the golden age of football talk and the community of people who are stimulated by it, by interacting. It's so much fun to be part of this. And yeah, it's nice to see this great, truly great rivalry have that mantle for the last game of the regular season.
Yeah. I'm you mentioned something that I really want to harp on for a second. I think three of the four teams in the AFC North have an unbelievably good community for talk. I think the Bengals are trailing a little bit in that regard, even though they've had some success. But the Browns fans are incredibly into it, remarkably, for what they've had to endure. And of course, Steelers and Ravens fans are vocal and analytic and on top of things. It's a very impressive division for just fan engagement.
Yeah, and we'll stay engaged even if sometimes the engagement's like a canker sore in your mouth. It is, you know, very essential to the identities of the cities, and you know, I think that's part of why there's this unrest that you're talking about. Because it feels like, and I think this has been for a lot of teams, you know, this has been a kind of tumultuous NFL season, but maybe, you know, both of these teams have a chance to have it matter most what they do last. But it will be interesting, because I think we've entered an era in the NFL where, you know, we should never say never about these things. And if we start to hear the rumblings, we often can look back and say that was the moment we should have known that this was possible.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the 2005 Steelers with their 7-5 start, right, went on to win the Super Bowl. The 2012 Ravens were an underdog in their last three playoff games by 9, 7.5, and 4. Didn't have any business winning the Super Bowl. Yeah. And, you know, I'm frustrated by the 19, 23, and 24 teams in terms of their inability to capitalize in the playoffs. But then I have to think back to 2012. And I'm not sure they had one Super Bowl among those 4 years in terms of expectation.
Well, and I'm, you're right about that for sure. And I think that the key, you know, the name is, of course, Lamar Jackson. And I think that just that there are whispers or murmurs about a relationship similar to what happened before the extension tells me that, and I think Lamar Jackson is somebody maybe to his own detriment that hears his critics. Mm-hmm. And that's why this is going to be a really interesting game to watch him and how he responds, acknowledging that he hears what people are saying and that the microscope's going to be, you know, tuned in a few more magnification levels of everything, including on the sidelines during that game.
All right. All right, Sigmund, thanks so much. Other folks out there, thanks for listening. Hit us up with hashtag Film Study Mailbag, and I'll get your question directed to the proper show or a simple 1 to 3 minute video. Sigmund, thanks again for coming on. And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.